Welcome to the DevCon Archives, featuring top sessions from the latest DevCon, which took place in Bangkok in November 2024. These episodes spotlight some of the best talks from the largest Ethereum developer conference, showcasing the technical advancements, mission, projects, and novel ideas shaping the Ethereum ecosystem. All talks have been recorded. You can find them on archive.devcon.org. Let's dive into today's featured talk.
Don't forget, everybody, to make sure you scan the QR code and get your questions ready for the panel afterwards.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to our panel. So today we're going to be talking about the fixed rate flywheel, which is a concept that we've developed about how fixed rate markets can fuel variable rate markets, and this creates kind of a virtuous cycle. So I'm joined today by my fellow panelists, Lucas Manuel, the co-founder of Phoenix Labs, Violet Venage, Twitter personality and just all-around DeFi expert, and Merlin Eaglelight, the co-founder of Morpho Labs. So let's get started. So first up, okay, great. I want to give people a quick primer on the fixed rate flywheel, and just to get started, I want to give a primer on fixed rate markets. So for those who are not familiar, fixed rate markets on Ethereum have already been deployed. They're already scaling. There's a good amount of liquidity on some of the markets, but just to understand the basic mechanism, we'll talk about how we actually get fixed rates from variable rates on Ethereum. So the basic idea is that right now you can deposit, let's say one USDC into a lending market, and you'll earn variable rate interest over time. So, this is great. We have variable rates, but how do we turn this into fixed rates? So the way that we do that is we create a separate smart contract, which will basically lock up this one USDC for a period of time. So let's say that we deploy the one USDC into a lending market like Aave, and this is going to accrue variable interest over the course of the term. So the first thing that we do is we create two tokens, a PT and a YT. So the principal token will own, basically it can be redeemed at maturity for the principal that was deposited into the position. So that's just one USDC in this case. The YT, the yield token, will receive all of the interest that accrued over the term. So how does this create a fixed rate? Well, because the PT only can be redeemed for one USDC at maturity, you're not going to buy it for one USDC because you can't do anything with the funds that are locked up. So you can't supply them to a lending market. You can't use them in a yield farm. It's just sitting there. So because of this, you're going to buy it at a discount. And so this could look like buying one USDC 6 months from now for, say, 95 cents of USDC. So if you do that, you'll pay 95 cents of USDC today. 6 months from now, you'll redeem it for one USDC, and you'll get what amounts to a 10% fixed rate of return. So it's a zero coupon bond. And then on the YT side, you're just going to be earning the interest that accrues over the term. So the idea is pretty simple. But this drives some interesting market dynamics and has some interesting applications. So the first thing that's worth noting is that all of these fixed rate markets are built on top of variable rate markets. So we have a couple panelists that work at companies that are such variable rate markets, like Phoenix Labs, Spark, and Morpho. These markets power the variable rate that ultimately leads to having a healthy fixed rate market. So every dollar that's put into the fixed rate market, either invested through the PT or the YT, is immediately going into the lending market. So as we get usage on the fixed rate market, it's actually supplying liquidity to the lending market as well. So even though the fixed rate market might have very different users from the lending market, it's actually still, it's actually still helping to grow that variable rate lending market. And then the interesting thing is that activity on the variable rate markets can actually drive growth on the fixed rate market. So recently at Delve Tech, we built a product called Fixed Rate Borrow, which basically allows you to convert a position on Morpho into a fixed rate position. The way that this works is that you'll open a borrow position on Morpho, and then you'll buy enough YTs so that you'll earn interest over the course of your loan that will actually offset the variable rate debt cost that you're accruing on Morpho. So, you know, as more people are using Morpho, some of them might choose to open a fixed rate loan. This will in turn drive activity to the fixed rate protocol, and every dollar that's put into the fixed rate protocol goes back into Morpho. So this is like this fixed rate flywheel that we're talking about. So now that we've kind of established what the fixed rate flywheel is and talked a little bit about fixed rate markets, we're gonna get into our panel discussion. So just to start off, we're gonna talk about the current fixed rate market. Okay. Yeah, so I'll start with Lucas. So Spark was built in the bear market and has achieved massive growth, like going into the bull market. How is Spark, you know, how has Spark achieved this adoption, and what are some of the main takeaways that you have from the user side from going to the bear market to the bull market?
Yeah, so just to give everyone some context on what Spark is, Maker has recently rebranded to Sky, and Sky will allocate liquidity to us, Spark, as a DAO to manage that liquidity and allocate it to different things. One of those things has been Sparkland, which is a fork of Aave V3 that allows users to borrow DAI or USDS at, I'm not going to call it a fixed rate because it's not. It's more of a stable rate. It's a rate that's set by Sky governance. So the value proposition of this is, as a user, you can get the benefits of Aave's, you know, rehypothecation of collateral and cross-collateralization across borrow positions without the algorithmic variable interest rate model. So you can borrow with that. So basically what I'm saying here is that there definitely is a demand for more stable borrow rates, which is part of this broader discussion. This was one approach to it, which was having a more sort of predictable rate, where you could see that the rate would be changing ahead of time, so you can adjust your rates or adjust your position. And so that was proven out during this last year and a bit, where we've gotten a lot of adoption. And another big thing that we've noticed is there's been a lot of demand for leveraging on Pendle principal tokens of SUSDE through Athena, through Morpho. So Spark has been allocating DAI into Morpho markets to allow people to borrow against their principal token yield positions in Athena. These users are able to lock in these, you know, quite high yields that we're getting from Athena that we're seeing without the sort of variability in these APYs that could affect the safety of their position. It's overall a lot more predictable of a way to borrow against the position. So both of those have been quite successful, and they're both based off of this principle of having like predictable interest rates for users.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, going to you, Merlin, so Morpho's also grown like a tremendous amount going into this bull market. Like, what have been some big takeaways from you, like, you know, on the user demand side?
Right. So as you said, like Morpho is like a lending primitive on which like some solutions for fixed rate market are being built. So on Morpho, you have like only interest rate model that are providing like variable rates for now. But we have more and more demand on like funds or arbitragers or like strategists. They want predictability on their rates because they want like to farm, use their funds, like they borrow USDC, they want to use them on other protocols. If you don't have like predictability on like the borrow rate, like you'll need at some point maybe to unwind your position and like face like some slippage, etc. So to protect you against that, like you need to find like some fixed rate solutions, and like solutions like Delve like are like ideal solutions. And more we have that that demand, mostly from like a more mature and I would say like more educated players in the space for those kind of things that are entering the space now that that's like DeFi is being integrated at the institutional level.
Yeah, I guess just a brief follow-up on that. I mean, can you compare and contrast like who's using variable rates and who's using fixed rates? Like which users want each one?
Right. I think like we've been used with variable rates since the beginning of DeFi because it has been like so we had like ETHLAND the beginning of Aave where you had like a fixed rate but it was like hard to manage on chain it was difficult so everyone like turned to like more algorithmic interest rate model because it's much more scalable. So like everyone in DeFi is like okay with variable rate and it's like in their zone of comfort but like from people coming from TradFi where like fixed rate is a norm like you have zero coupon bond everywhere it does not really make sense to have like variable rates. I think it will change like in the coming years like I really think that the fixed rate will be like the base of like lending and everything on chain, but it's just like it requires like much more like complexity of managing those rates, like order books, managing order books. It's like we are closer to market making. Quant trading if you really want to have like an efficient market of like of fixed rates and we are not there yet but having both solutions right now is like a good way to onboard like those that are asking for fixed rate that are coming to from the TradFi ecosystem.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess just to talk a little bit more about the degen side of things, like the kind of crypto native DeFi users. So one of the biggest use cases for fixed rate protocols of late is points trading. So we've seen Pendle achieve massive success trading points. And the reason for this is that it's really the only venue where you can do that. I guess a question for you, Violet, is do you see this as a form of product market fit? Or do you think it's more of a passing fad in the industry?
Yes, this is very obviously product market fit because buying cryptocurrency and then gambling on the price of the cryptocurrency has incredible product market fit and has like sustained a huge amount of usage for the past 20 or for the past years. And even if you look further back through history, gambling has always had like a fairly huge amount of product market fit. The real question to me isn't if this behavior where you are seeing people effectively trading the underlying future token rights is product market fit. The real question, I think, is this fixed rates? Like, if you ask somebody from sort of like any other financial sphere, oh, purchasing the sort of like future stock issuance of a company, is that fixed rate trading? I would say they would probably say that that is not fixed rate trading. So I think this has incredible product market fit because it lets you do something that many of the most DeFi native people want to do, which is speculate on these sort of upcoming token launches. However, this like class of users is entirely separate from the sort of like people who are interested in maintaining like predictable loan positions or financing various projects or even getting sort of predictable rates for their leverage. So I think that while it has been highly successful and it is like undoubtedly a form of product market fit to be able to trade these cryptocurrency tokens before they exist, I don't really consider this behavior as fixed rates. Instead, I think this is sort of like the most convenient legal way to trade future issuance of cryptocurrencies with the sort of wink, wink, nod, nod of like a BD team telling you, oh, the tokens will be there in the future.
I guess just to push back slightly on that, there are still fixed rates going on in these markets because people that are buying the future issuance are buying the YTs typically. So, and this is pushing the rates up, which is creating opportunities for really high yield PTs. So I guess maybe if you want to elaborate a little bit more on that dichotomy, that would be good.
Yeah, obviously this also creates a good deal for the sort of capital providers, and it makes it sort of explicit the deal that has been sort of implicit through the history of many of the launches of DeFi protocols, which is that we will pay you a high percentage interest rate, like a very high percentage interest rate, in tokens, in the sort of future expected value of the cryptocurrency tokens. And normally, no protocol can ever say that to you because the lawyer would like tackle the CEO and just force them to stop speaking because this is sort of like a comically legal thing to say to people unless the regulatory regime changes in a dramatic way for some reason. But it does produce, it like, the product here adds legibility to the sort of market. And I don't think that people are buying high interest rate bonds because the rate is fixed, but rather because the interest rate is high. And this has sort of always been the reason that they put money into sort of novel DeFi products, which they expected to have sort of future issuance of tokens to give them high interest. So yes, it does create a really interesting fixed rate product, and it does de-risk the sort of like allocation of capital into sort of novel DeFi products. And this is useful for the protocols. But I don't think it displays a product market fit for bonds that are sort of fixed rate. Instead, it just displays the appetite for capital to get high interest rates from deploying to sort of high risk new DeFi protocols.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I guess going to the next section, we're going to talk a little bit more about integration and market dynamics for like more of the traditional side of things, which to Violet's point has lower rates and is used in pretty different ways. So starting with you, Violet, you know, you've been involved in fixed rate markets since the beginning. Like, what are some things that people should be mindful of when they're managing risks in these markets?
I think that there are two things that are kind of underexplored. The first is that as you have more real world assets, many of these real-world assets, even if they pay variable or fixed rates, may not have like the expected risk profiles. In fact, there have been a recent string of defaults occurring in the Maker system in their sort of real-world asset vaults because provisioning credit is a very challenging behavior. And I think it's sort of like the default assumption of the DeFi industry is that they will be able to sort of copy this behavior from the sort of TradFi, the traditional financial institutions, but that is like the sort of like pricing of this risk is like not actually a tremendously easy process. And many people who have tried in the DeFi space have like run into major problems, and we're seeing some defaults now. In addition to this, I think you add in like another layer of risk, which is the smart contract risk. Whenever you're shipping like two integrations a week for months at a time, the chances of a large issue go up. And I think that this is like a type of risk that is important to quantify because like when you're bringing these products to more institutional investors, I think this is the thing that they're the least familiar with actually, is how to quantify the sort of smart contract risk of having many integrations and having many like of these problems. And so I think those are the risks.
Yeah, that makes sense. So Lucas, you know, Spark has started to integrate with more of these fixed rate protocols. So you've been kind of trying to wrap your head around a lot of these issues. What have been some surprises for you as you're doing those integrations?
So the main integration that we've done so far is the Morpho integration with the Pendle Athena PTs. And so an interesting problem for us to solve and to iterate on has been pricing these tokens on chain. So we started with a fixed price oracle at $1, and then we would adjust the maximum loan to value parameters to basically account for that risk. We've updated those oracles recently to basically dynamically price the PTs based on how long they've existed and basically the point on the line of that discount. What is an interesting thing to think about is if the fixed rate market changes and the fixed rate increases, and for some reason a user's position goes underwater, liquidating those PTs on the open market will actually yield like a lower price because people don't want to buy that that token at that price if they can get a better opportunity with another principal token. So what's been interesting to think about is in that situation, Maker would have to purchase those PTs and essentially hold them to their duration. And so what happens there is instead of liquidating them on the open market and having that immediate liquidity, instead what's happening is Maker is holding them to maturity, still getting that yield, this value is still there, but the underlying liquidity has to be redeemed at a later date. So there is duration risk that needs to be considered when onboarding these different collateral types, these novel collateral types. So we're conservatively adjusting the risk parameters to account for these situations, making sure that we're not getting into any sort of real trouble by onboarding these. But it's definitely an interesting new primitive, and it's exciting, and I think there's a lot of additional work to be done.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, I mean, Merlin, I think you're in kind of a similar position. You guys have started integrating with fixed rates, like, you know, these Pendle positions, but you're also looking at things like fixed rate borrow, which is kind of attacking this from the opposite direction. I mean, what have been some big learnings for you, and, you know, how do you deal with things like liquidations?
Right. So coming back to what Lucas was saying, is like liquidating a PT token is much more complex. First on like just like selling the token, but if you can't sell it, like you need to keep it. So that requires capital, and like not all liquidators can do that. So the pool of potential liquidators is obviously like has a constraint, and that can be like end up with bad debt if it's like if you have too high like LTVs that do not account for those kind of issues. So it's definitely something that that needs to be taken into account by risk raters or like any people building and creating markets on top of Morpho that are using like PT tokens as collateral. On the borrow side, it's quite recent with the Hyperdrive and Delve integration. We have like some requests to use that. It's quite interesting to see how will it go into during the next few months. For now, I don't think we have enough data to like say anything on that use case, but we're definitely keen to see what will happen. What has been what has surprised me is like, so Delve is like fully on chain systems, and there are other systems that are like kind of like doing fixed rate but off-chain and on-chain settlement, like I'm thinking about Pwn for instance, and they are looking into integrating Morpho, and the interesting thing is like they could use the same exact same market with variable rate but end up like sharing like liquidity and together like with Morpho, with Pwn, with Delve, and that will nourish like the Morpho's network effect, but also like the market's liquidity. So I'm curious to see how will it what will happen in the next few months.
Yeah, me too. I guess Lucas, just to double down on that point on oracles, you know, looking a little bit ahead into the future, maybe over the course of the next like 6 months to 1 year, you know, what would you like to see on the oracle side from fixed rate protocols?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because there's like the theoretical price of the token based off of the discount and the time that's passed, but then there's also the reality of the secondary markets. And for something, you know, as deep as like U.S. Treasuries, you can really base the value of these bonds based on the secondary market. But the reality of the situation is in DeFi, we have like nowhere close to that level of liquidity yet. Down the road, if we do, maybe we can consider starting to base these oracles more on secondary markets. And maybe there's some kind of hybrid solution that we can investigate. This is definitely a new area to focus on, so we're definitely open to a lot of different approaches right now. But it seems like the way that we're thinking about this now, we're pretty comfortable with this, you know, theoretical pricing oracle. We are querying the underlying assets price, and then like using this theoretical value. And then, you know, adjusting the LLTV to make sure that we're still conservative so that if we're ever liquidating a user, we can hold this token to maturity and it won't hurt the protocol in any significant way.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you see that in a similar way, Merlin? Or do you have any other kind of takes on that issue?
No, I definitely agree that like taking the market price like is clearly not ideal because it's like you could like manipulate it very easily. I deeply think that you need to just like use I think the latest version of the Oracle that is like trying to approximate like the price depending on like the time to maturity is like a good first step into have like a more resilient Oracle. I'm sure there's better way to do it, but it's more it's better than like having like a fixed price, and it's clearly better than like a market price.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, I mean, now that we've kind of discussed some of the challenges in the current market, let's shift our attention to the future market. So starting with you, Violet, I mean, you're, you know, an expert in the space of privacy and zero-knowledge proofs. It sounds to me like a lot of these issues involving oracles, liquidation, et cetera, could be perhaps benefited by scaling solutions. I guess I'd like to hear you talk about that, but also, are there any other areas of overlap that you see with like the future of privacy and scaling solutions in these markets?
Yeah, I think the impact of sort of scaling solutions on the liquidation of these markets will be primarily driven by the sort of increase in the sort of depth and like breadth of the sort of financial institutions who are able to use these well. Because I think if you have like very long tail assets, like call it like Pendle on Corn Farm dated to July of 2025, and not Pendle on Corn Farm dated to July 15th of 2025, you're always going to, I think, have difficulty pricing this well until you get really good and like competent financial institutions trading on chain. And these people will have to be much more like savvy and regular traders than sort of your normal like liquidators in the cryptocurrency market who are looking to dump these things into the liquid space as quickly as possible. Or you need to start having yield sources which are more like legible. And so I do think that scaling solutions will help with this because they will drive sort of more institutional adoption and sort of more traditional financial systems. And so I do think that's a connection. But I think that what is like much more important potentially is actually the privacy component of ZK, which is like if you look at the sort of traditional financial system, fixed rate loans kind of didn't happen in this direction. Right, like you started with the fixed rate loan because these were easy contracts to make between various parties. And I think still there's still a huge gap in the sort of like fixed rate lending ecosystem of Ethereum and DeFi in general where you don't generally have people just sort of making lending deals to each other on chain in a legible way. And I think what you might start to see as sort of the next wave is ZK-enabled private lending contracts that are sort of automatically executed by Ethereum, which use fixed rates and which use ZK to prove various properties about their like originators, their lenders, their interest rates, the collateralization ratios. If you can prove compliance of the sort of like institutional investors by automatically executing their loans on chain and by proving various details about them without leaking this information to the public, you might start to see like better quality and larger lending desks making sort of the actual fixed rate loans that you see in TradFi that sort of are the backbone of the TradFi lending ecosystem. And you could start to see real bonds, and these could be assembled into like real products using the proofs of validity that ensure that you have like bonds that meet certain criteria. And so I think the privacy and validity components of ZK in this use case are very important. And I think that they will help bring the sort of like missing component of like actual fixed rate agreements out of TradFi into DeFi. And this may not look like DeFi as it exists now, because these sort of automatically executing agreements are not really like over collateralized necessarily. But I think this is the future if for fixed rates, is like that the difference between TradFi and DeFi will start to evaporate as we get good tools to bring off-chain and semi-on-chain financial instruments to sort of like production grade on Ethereum.
Yeah, I just want to echo that. I completely agree. I think that's the sort of next step that I see is totally necessary to get big institutional, traditional financial involvement, is having these things like privacy and zero knowledge, privacy pools to allow for these institutions to be provably compliant without doxing themselves, I think is also going to be like a massive necessary step that we have to take as an industry to get more of these, you know, hedge funds and big, you know, TradFi institutions on chain and doing regular financial transactions. That'll just be a necessary step for us to take.
Yeah, totally agree too. I guess in that vein, you know, Merlin, you guys have started to work recently with Swissborg. So I think we're really starting to see institutions come on chain.
Yeah. So Swissborg was a first step in that direction. And like we are talking to other fintechs. One cool thing about MoFo is like you have like market that are isolated, and like permission, like the creation of market is permissionless. What that means for institutions is like you can create like whatever market you want and gate the market. If you want to be compliant, you can gate the market and requires KYC for users. What you can do is also maybe you don't care about KYC, but you want to gate the vault that is managing your funds and like but and you want to have an exposure to a given basket of assets. This is and like institutions, like because it's fully immutable and non-custodial, they own the whole stack. And I think this is very important to have this, and it's like one of the most important argument when they want to integrate a lending protocol is like, do we own everything from like of the stack, or who are we trusting? Are we trusting a governance body, a third party, with who we are dealing with? And I think like having immutable, non-upgradable governance minimized protocol like solve the issue of like, are we owning the stack? But everything that is related to are we compliant, are we gating, etc., is using attestations and hopefully, like in the future, ZK proof as much as possible, so that like any users could like prove that they've done a KYC without revealing their identity. This is already the case for like a KYC, but you can still track addresses, etc. It's clearly not ideal, and it's the right now the experience is like it's cumbersome. So like not everyone is doing it. So we are talking with a lot of fintechs, and this problematic is like one of the top ones that we need to solve, like as like a global ecosystem. But we're not there yet, I think.
Yeah, totally agree. We're seeing the same thing on the fixed market side of things, where you know institutions want to own the whole stack and make sure their funds aren't mixed. I guess, Lucas, I feel like at Spark, you guys have taken a slightly different approach, where you know instead of a huge institution backing you, you're working very closely with Maker. I guess what are some differences in you know working with large protocols instead of institutions, and how is that going to change the onboarding process?
Yeah, so it's a pretty interesting situation to be partnered with Sky Maker. Because with that, we have a really large liquidity provider that's completely DeFi native. And so with that, it's a pretty unique opportunity to be able to evaluate all these different DeFi protocols, basically just purely on their merit and their economical opportunities. We're not as held up by regulatory red tape at this point in terms of allocating funds into DeFi protocols specifically. So it is a cool opportunity. Are experiencing you know similar things with allocating funds into institutions, more of our real world assets side of things. But that's sort of the other side of it. It's taking funds off chain rather than bringing them on chain. But it is a different sort of paradigm to be working with a DeFi native large LP.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess I think we can transition a bit. So we're going to be taking some audience Q&A, but just before we get started, kind of wanted to summarize some of the panel discussion and see if anyone had any hot takes. So Violet, I think you had one, if you want to go ahead and share it.
Yeah, I would say my hot take is that DeFi is going to not become, finance isn't going to become DeFi. DeFi is going to become finance. And I think in that way, you will see like many more like products that kind of do not align with the most cyberpunk definitions of like what a lending protocol should be. You'll probably see more just like legal agreements that are executed automatically on chain. You'll see more trusted parties like, and this will probably be the way that DeFi will scale, that it will be accessed by millions of people. And the sort of DeFi protocols that we love, that we're passionate about, will grow much more slowly because it will be much easier for normal people to access institutional grade DeFi than to be sort of DeFi pilled on the like most cyberpunk Rye, like automated controllers, automated market makers, or with like completely decentralized systems, than it will be for like someone to be using like Maker to get a car loan. Like we will see like DeFi become finance, not because finance will become decentralized, but instead because these tools will be used in new ways that many of us will not like very much.
Yeah, I actually want to follow up on that because like, I agree. I think there will definitely be a faction of DeFi that will be, you know, for the cypherpunks, and it will be available. But I think it is exciting that we are actually moving in a direction where we're bringing real world finance on chain and using Ethereum. I think that's like kind of the dream that a lot of us have is to move the economy on chain. And like one of the things that really excites me personally about Spark and Sky is the idea that with these new instruments and with this increased institutional adoption, we're able to bring back these yield opportunities to the end user really easily through savings USDS, through the Sky savings rate. All the revenue that Sky is generating by allocating into these different yield-bearing strategies that are increasingly going to get more into traditional finance, we can actually bring that back to the end user with the Sky savings rate. So it's basically, like, if you go to a traditional financial bank and you deposit into their savings account, you're going to get a pretty low yield that is, you know, not even close to anything that you would see in DeFi. But what's really nice about Maker is you can just deposit your USDS into the savings rate. And right now, it's going up from 6.5 to 8.5%. And you can just park your funds there and let them sit. And that's available to anyone that has an internet connection and is completely permissionless.
All right. Coming back to fixed rate, I think one hot take is, like, right now lending primitives are based on, like, variable rates. I think long term it will be the opposite. Like, every primitive will use like fixed rates, and you'll have variable rates because you'll be like, there will be like on-chain matching of like you'll have like a market for bonds, and like as a user you want a passive experience, and like someone will like manage your fund and like match those orders, and you'll basically have like market making on chain that will abstract the complexity of like dealing with like various bonds of with different rates. I think this is where we are going, and just like this requires the ecosystem to mature and to have like more expert financial expert to enter the space, and this will occur thanks to like a Spark for instance, bringing more institutions on chain.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think kind of piggybacking on that, one of the hot takes that I would have is that I think that the fixed rate markets are making the lending markets look a lot more like what happened in decentralized exchange a few years ago. So, you know, DEXs kind of started off with there being a bunch of different siloed DEXs. So we had 0x, we had Uniswap, and then we saw this layer of aggregators emerge. So that was like, you know, Matcha, 1inch, Paraswap, et cetera. Then we had aggregators of aggregators with MetaMask Swap. And it's just become increasingly clear that like the base level exchange is not actually what users are going to interact with. And I think we're not quite there in fixed rates because I think it's a bit more complicated. Kind of like we've talked about, I think that there are some issues integrating fixed rate protocols with variable rate protocols. You know, it's a collateral type that we haven't completely solved the issue of integrating with. But I think that's where it's going. And I think I agree with you. Like, we're going to start to see a lot more, you know, aggregated approaches where you're not necessarily buying a fixed rate from a single protocol. You're buying a basket of fixed rate from a bunch of different protocols, potentially like the ones that Violet's talking about, you know, where they're not even originating from a variable rate protocol. And that's going to become more of what users are interacting with, because that's like your money market, you know, your high yield savings account, et cetera. And that's ultimately what I think institutions and even large, you know, DeFi protocols like Maker want. But yeah, I mean, if anyone else wants to share any other thoughts, I think we have a couple minutes. Otherwise, we can move to Q&A. Cool.
Q&A.
Sorry.
Q&A.
Let's go.
Okay. There we go. Okay. So starting off. Is there a role for auction-priced fixed-rate lending, i.e. term finance, or is the way forward YTPT for fixed lending? Does anyone want to take that?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, almost certainly you will have institutions who are willing to price their sort of like loans in this way, or you'll have aggregated market information coming from many sort of fixed rate loans that are made ad hoc and then getting like publicized into the sort of normal market. And like you might get something like a DeFi LIBOR, which is setting like the mid-market price, and then you could have batch auctions around it. I think in general, I don't believe that YTPT is going to be the sort of core paradigm of fixed rate in the future. Instead, this is just a very convenient abstraction for the smart contracts to be able to integrate with the variable rate markets. And yeah, I think the auction-based priced lending with many different actors all following the same rules is almost certainly going to be very relevant.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with that. I guess another thing I would say is you can do auction-priced fixed-rate lending with the YTPT model. We're already starting to see this where people are trading YTs and PTs off AMMs and doing like OTC deals. You can also do that with auctions. So basically, instead of having an LP in the middle, you can just directly match these funds, because fundamentally, a YT plus a PT is just equal to one base token. So as long as you have people on either side of that trade, they can put the one base token into the fixed rate protocol and mint the YT and the PT. But yeah, so I think the next question is, people say RWA and TradFi on-chain will make it more accessible, but so far that's not been the case. Only approved users are allowed to do so. Why are we bullish on it?
So only approved users. So there are still like a permissionless market on Morpho with real-world asset as collateral. So that's still possible to access. Even like it's not gated market, that's true. Why bullish? It's because, like, for instance, there's a rate like in bear market that is like the one of the financial system. So you still have like a lower bound on the rate that you can earn. So it can like drive more liquidity into more flow of liquidity onto like lending protocols. And one cool thing with Morpho, for instance, is like if the liquidity is not used on like this real world asset market, and there's like another good opportunity that is more DeFi native, those market can share liquidity, and like the liquidity can be reallocated like in time when it's needed. So I think like why bullish is like you have that lower bound of rates that is driving more liquidity on chain, and that will be useful for DeFi native markets.
Yeah, I think just also in general, there is going to be a sort of spectrum of how restricted certain protocols are. And I think the general idea of bringing more liquidity on chain is just always a good thing. Markets will get more efficient, more products will get used, wider usage, and there will be these sort of hybrid models. Like a good example of this is actually Maple Finance with Syrup USDC. They are allowing for users to deposit into a lending pool that's lent out to institutional borrowers, but it's done in such a way where they're, you know, not allowing certain jurisdictions like the US to remain regulatory compliant. But it is this sort of hybrid solution where you're seeing retail users get access to yield that's generated by institutional borrowers.
Yep, I think that makes sense. I mean, I think the only other thing I would say here is the question says only approved users, U.S. citizens only, or such conditions. I'd say that you know, right now, most DeFi products can actually be used more easily outside of the U.S. And I think that generally speaking, you know, there's, you know, TradFi in other countries as well. So I think TradFi and RWA is coming on chain may right now look pretty US-centric. That doesn't necessarily mean that's the case long-term. So I think just like we're seeing things that can only be used by US ECPs and stuff like that, we're going to see the same thing in other countries. And we're also going to see these DeFi native solutions.
Just wanted to add something on that lower bound rates. It's like, okay, maybe the real world asset is permission, but like on the loan side, you can have like USDC or USDS that is totally like permissionless, and you can come deposit liquidity to earn an interest on this and like kind of get exposure to that real world asset rates without like but still keeping like without requiring any KYC. I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, that makes sense. So the next question is, who is the customer for fixed rate loans? Merlin, I think you already kind of answered this, but.
Yeah, so you said it, I think like there's two types, like the degens, farming points and like Pendle PT tokens as collateral and looping like crazy. And there are also like a more TradFi institutional players that are used to fixed rate, and they want to enter the DeFi space and like do some complex strategies or things like that, or retrieve just like what they are familiar with, and they are asking for those kind of product.
All right, Violet, looks like you have a question.
Due to the terms and conditions of my advisorship to Wildcat Finance, I'm obligated to shill them instead. Thank you.
No comment. All right. How to deal with privacy versus efficiency. A good example in TradFi is Iceberg Order that hides the quantity being traded but has less priority. What about double bid sealed auctions?
Very good question. I think you will actually see ZK making privacy more accessible in TradFi as well, because currently it's more difficult in TradFi to sort of guarantee that the parties who are doing these types of behaviors where they're hiding some portions of their like order or doing other types of things are actually being fully honest about it, or that they're following certain rules. And of course you can enforce this via regulation, but this may come to as a shock to people. Sometimes people don't follow regulations, and sometimes they commit fraud. And so I think it will actually be easier in TradFi. You might have TradFi applications of ZK, which are completely independent of blockchain, which bring more privacy to more types of transactions.
Okay, cool. We can go to the next question. Why traditional can't offer high fixed rate high fixed rate yields like DeFi?
Because when the cryptocurrencies go up and they pay you in cryptocurrencies, the interest rates are high.
I just want to add, like, I deeply think you can still like get like very high rate in the TradFi ecosystem. It's just like you, as a retail, you can't access it. And this goes back to what Lucas was saying, is like Spark is like, and like any DeFi protocols are just about like providing the good rates to end users, which is like something that is completely gated into the TradFi ecosystem. So it's just like, I think it's just hidden and you can't see it. And after, like, you can also have like very, very crazy DeFi rates that might not appear in the TradFi ecosystem, but because like you don't have like smart contract risk, and you have there perhaps less meme coins or those kind of things, because it's a bit older.
Yeah, I just want to echo what Merlin was saying. I think the biggest thing is that you don't hear about these large yields as, you know, retail users in TradFi, but they are available to, you know, big institutional players, accredited investors. There's gatekeeping that happens in the traditional financial system, and through DeFi you can pass these yields back to the user more easily. But another thing on top of that is the vast efficiencies of using something like DeFi. Again, to bring it back to Maple Finance, like, you know, getting theoretically hundreds or thousands of liquidity providers in different countries to lend into one pool, and that pool lending out to many institutions, and then collecting the interest and redistributing that to all the LPs. If that was done in the traditional financial system with wire transfers and manual reconciliation, all of the administrative costs and the settlement time to do with that is just like an absolute inconceivable nightmare, you know what I mean? Especially for like low amounts, like if people are depositing $100, $1,000. But with smart contracts, as soon as one borrower makes a payment, that interest is, you know, automatically distributed to all the LPs immediately. So the amount of efficiency that you gain with that, you really can pass on these yields back to the users in a much better way.
Well, listen, thanks a million, guys. That was a really, really insightful panel. Let's give a shout out to Inventive Mongoose for providing 95% of the questions there. That was thanks a lot. Thanks again to our panelists. A round of applause.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to visit archive.devcon.org to watch and listen to all the other DevCon talks. We look forward to seeing you next time.